Strong a word. But Istanbul was in a period of decline, and no one was much bothered by the actions of a small village, not when Western Europe was in such turmoil. And so, Azad became a sanctuary for magic. She took another sip of one of the drinks. Her eyes were distant. I was in Istanbul at the time, on business. Maven cast a furtive glance at Lax, then continued. But I kept hearing stories about a city of magic, and decided to investigate. When I arrived in the village, it didn't take me long to learn that there were three gnolls living there.
Three? I asked, shocked. Most of the time, gnolls are divided by thousands of miles. It's been theorized that this is an evolutionary imperative.
What was the population?
She shrugged.
500, 600 people? And yet, three of them were gnolls.
One was a woman in her 50s, another a man in his early 20s, and the third was a teenage girl, maybe 17?
Before you ask, they were not related. In fact, they were from three different clans.
Another glance at Lax.
Three different which clans?
My mouth dropped open. They were all from witch families? Maven nodded.
That was when I began to suspect that all gnolls are descended from magical lines. The most powerful lines.
It was too much. I scooted back in my chair and got up to pace, trying to absorb the implications. Lax, meanwhile, was looking at Maven.
Why didn't you tell me? She asked softly.
Maven blinked.
Honestly? I thought you knew. Because of your niece.
Lex was a powerful witch, which meant her twin sister had inherited witch blood as well.
But John,
she began, and then faltered.
He doesn't have magic.
I paused in my pacing, turning to look at Lex.
His mother does.
All three of them looked up at me.
What?
Lex said, as incredulous as I'd ever seen her.
Blossom has magic?
Yeah, she activated it as a teenager and then stopped using it, probably shortly after it kicked in. I can still feel it, though.
And men often miss out on the active gene,
Maven said mildly. Now Lex looked as stunned as I felt, which, okay, if I'm being honest, made me feel a little better. At least I wasn't the only one who'd barely known my own family.
Wait.
My own family?
You're saying my parents were witches?
I said to Maven.
That's ludicrous. They were the most normal humans I've ever met.
I thought back to the last few times I'd been with them. I'd never felt anything strange, anything I would later recognize as witches in my radius. It wasn't possible. Maven spread her hands.
They might not have been active. They might not have even known. But if you're a gnoll, your parents both came from extremely strong magical bloodlines. Unless you were adopted.
I was fairly certain I wasn't adopted. I looked just like my mother, and I'd seen pictures of her pregnant with me. Jack and I both had our father's green eyes. Which meant they'd had witch blood. I dropped back into my chair, feeling suddenly faint.
You should eat something, Scar.
Molly murmured. After looking to Maven for permission, she slid one of the scones over to me. I picked at it absently. My parents had had witch blood. Both of them. What were the odds? Actually, wait. The odds were minuscule. That was the whole point. For thousands of years, witch blood had become more and more diluted as witches married humans. How often would two descendants from extremely powerful witch bloodlines find each other? Almost never. Which explained why gnolls were so rare.
Can you please continue your story?
I said to Maven. Looking sympathetic, she said,
In Azad, the two younger gnolls eventually fell in love.
And then she got pregnant, I said.
Yes, they had a little girl, which was a shock.
Even back then, anyone who knew about gnolls knew they were barren.
Maven broke off a piece of scone, chewing blissfully.
Anyway, I came to town when the girl was about 3. I met the family briefly, and then I had to report to the Vampire Council to decide if we needed to do something about the child, or about Azad in general. Too many people knew about witch magic for the Council's liking.
And? Molly asked. Maven's expression clouded over.
Ultimately, it never came to that. A small army of radical Christian humans learned about Azad, and they burned the village to the ground. Some escaped, but not the 2 gnolls, or their child.
We all fell silent, but after a moment, I had to ask.
The baby, I said quietly.
What was she?
Was she human?
Maven's eyes were sad.
She was a witch. The most powerful witch I have ever met.
Chapter 12. They wanted to learn something from him. That much was obvious, but Jesse couldn't tell if the Luparii witches had something specific in mind, or if it was just a fishing expedition.
Time for an experiment.
Jesse squeezed his eyes shut.
Sabine, he thought as hard as he could. I'm ready to tell you everything.
There was no reaction, which didn't prove anything, of course, but it made Jesse suspect that perhaps she couldn't read his immediate thoughts. Jesse had no idea how much of this spell was Sabine and how much was his own, what, projections? Creative input? Was he putting the items in the boxes, or were they already there, waiting to be discovered? Was it really like a raid, where the Luparii could look through his memories like a file cabinet? Or was she just trying to trick him into thinking about whatever he wouldn't want them to know? When the Luparii had first come to Los Angeles, years ago, it had been because the city was being terrorized by a magical aberration, a Nova Wolf, driven to kill and turn as many people as possible. Werewolves were one thing, but a Nova Wolf was a rare occurrence. Someone in Will's pack had used his connections to alert the Luparii, trying to make a deal to get Will out of the way. A Luparii scout had come, but not to make a deal. In fact, she'd ended up double-crossing the werewolf who'd made the offer, using Shadow to kill him. After that, she'd gone hunting. Before the Luparii scout could find the Nova Wolf, however, Jesse and Scarlet had stolen Shadow and arranged for the Luparii scout to be sent to prison for the Nova Wolf's kills. Shadow had then helped them kill the Nova Wolf, Henry Remus. Afterward, Dashiell had brokered a deal with the European Luparii witches to stay the hell out of L.A. It had been a very neat solution, all things considered. At the time, even Scarlet had thought the deal seemed a little too pat, but they'd had more crises to deal with, and none of them had expected the Luparii witches to return. So why had they come back? And why the focus on Scarlet's whereabouts? Jesse could think of a few possibilities, but he wasn't going to get answers unless he got out of here. Or was he? What had Killian said about this spell? You can afford the distraction? That implied that the twisted slumber required a little bit of her active concentration, which would mean that the Sabine who'd appeared in the evidence room wasn't just part of a dream. She was part of the real Sabine's active consciousness. Maybe Jesse could learn something from her. It was a hell of a leap of logic, but it gave Jesse something to hold on to, and something to do. Time for part 2 of the experiment. Making sure his mind was clear, Jesse called, I know you're with the Luparii.
Suddenly, Sabine was there, leaning against the nearest shelf with a bored look on her face.
Congratulations on being slightly less of an idiot than we thought.
You used some kind of illusion spell back at the cottage, Jesse went on. That's your whole thing, right? You twist things into darkness?
She didn't answer, so Jesse tried a new tactic.
"You're supposed to stay out of Los Angeles,"
he said. To his own ears, he sounded like a petulant child.
"There was a deal."
Sabine smirked.
"I think it's safe to say the deal is off."
"Because you couldn't stand to have someone else take your toy?" he scoffed. "All this is about you being a sore loser?"
She didn't like that.
"This is about the natural order," she hissed. "And yes, what we want is owed to us. Our birthright."
"Shadow? The Bargest is your birthright?"
Jesse said without thinking. Her expression grew cagey as she realized he was trying to keep her talking.
"Clever, clever,"
she sang, giving him a little mock bow.
"But that won't work. And we've already got what we came for.
You are quickly running out of usefulness, Jesse Cruz."
"So first you let Scarlet get away, and now you're going to murder a mildly famous ex-cop? Won't that get you in trouble with your superiors?"
That annoyed her.
"You forget,"
she snapped, spreading her arms.
"This is my world. Here, I have no superior."
"Then why did you run away before?"
Jesse taunted.
"You were scared I'd learn something from you, because this connection goes both ways. If you're so confident about killing me, why not tell me the plan?"
Her fists clenched. Suddenly the shelves around Jesse seemed to grow, rising to tower threateningly over him. Boxes rattled toward the edges of their shelves, poised to fall right on him.
"If this is you trying to show me you're not scared," Jesse said in a bored voice, "you really do suck at it."
She grew again, her body distorting and leaning into him in a horrific parody of human behavior. It was as though someone had taken everything in Jesse's eyeline and stretched it like silly putty, first vertically, then horizontally. Only Jesse stayed the same size. The now giant woman leaned down, wrapping her oversized fingers around Jesse's neck and lifting. She slammed him against some of the shelving, his spine making impact. It hurt like hell, even though it seemed ridiculous that it would. When she touched him, though, it was like a window opening. Jesse could feel the anger and crazed intentions leaking out of her. There was something wrong with this woman, aside from the obvious. She had a screw loose. There was something else there, too. A longing, a wish that occupied part of her mind at all times. Jesse had a brief image of riding a horse, carrying a sword, violence and viciousness and unimaginable power. What, she secretly dreamed of being a warlord? Then she tightened her fingers, and Jesse immediately forgot about the sensation of riding.
"Little boy," she thundered, "you have no idea what's coming. It's a shame you won't live to see your friends suffer and die."
Jesse clawed at her hands, trying to get air, which he somehow still needed. Then she smiled.
"But I can help with that."
She let go of his neck, and Jesse tumbled to the floor, dazed. It was eerily quiet, and when he finally managed to sit up, he saw that Sabine was gone, and so were the endless shelves. He was back inside Scarlet's little cottage. Everything looked just as it had when the Loparii witches had knocked on the door. Had he really woken up? He noticed that Scarlet's bedroom door was closed. She usually left it open so Shadow could go in and out as she pleased. Had it been closed when he'd gotten back to the cottage with Shadow? He couldn't remember. Jesse staggered to his feet, leaning against the wall. He felt feverish, and he was desperate for water, but first he had to know. Lurching toward the bedroom door, he knocked lightly.
"Scarlet?"
There was no answer, so he turned the knob and pushed the door open. Scarlet's lifeless eyes stared at him. She was lying upside down on the bed, her head hanging over the foot, pointed at the door. Her clothes had been slashed and shredded, and blood soaked the sheets around her, running down her neck and into her hair, soaking the carpet. Jesse gasped and yanked the door shut, trying to control his breathing.
Was it real?
It couldn't be real, could it? He was still in the twisted slumber, right? He opened the door again, hoping it had vanished like a hallucination in a horror movie. But no, her body was still there, still staring at him. Jesse closed the door again, distantly hearing his own whimpers. He wanted to run outside, to fight something, to move, but he felt weak and lightheaded, and so hot. His clothes were soaked with sweat. Did that mean he was awake now? He couldn't be.
It's still the spell, he told himself, even as he slid down the wall, his sweaty clothes aiding him. Scarlet will call to check on you. When you don't answer, she'll realize that something is wrong.
He'd have to wait for that. She would come for him. She was still alive. She was. Jesse felt a rush of despair, and then there was only black. Chapter 13. A witch? You said she was 3, I protested. Witches don't come into their power until they go through puberty.
Regular witches, yes, Maven answered. But the little girl in Azad had activated her magic before she could walk. She was a witchling.
Lex looked up sharply.
What does that mean?
Her expression soured. Biological father called me a deathling.
Because you're nearly a purebred conduit, Maven told her.
Conduits were the first humans, well, whatever was before humans, who bonded with magic. They are also the ancestors of every magical race on Earth. Vampires, werewolves, witches, and, yes, gnolls, all descended from them. I didn't really understand what she meant about Lex, but I was too wrapped up in the story to ask.
Please, I said to Maven, why were those gnolls able to get pregnant? And why was the baby a witch?
Maven sighed.
This part is all theory, you understand. I can't prove it. And short of Lex's friend the scientist, she glanced at Lex, no one has ever even tried. But we know that witch bloodlines have become more and more diluted, which has caused the ley lines to fade, which has caused all of magic to diminish.
This was all news to me, but Lex was nodding.
That's why vampires and werewolves are having a hard time reproducing, she explained to me.
Ley lines, I repeated. Were there ley lines in L.A.? I had about a dozen follow-up questions on that alone, but Maven continued.
I believe that gnolls are an evolutionary response to the diminishment of magic. When 2 gnolls have a baby, that child is born with power nearly equal to a conduit. A witchling.
Which is why the parents are gnolls, Molly supplied, because they can keep the baby from hurting anyone with magic.
Maven nodded again.
Witchlings may only come once in 1,000 years, but they restart the bloodlines, boost the ley lines. They keep magic going.
She held out her hands, palms up.
That's my theory, anyway. But the witchling in Azad was the first I'd met. And the last.
She gave me a sad, complicated smile.
Unless, of course, you were to hypothetically become pregnant.
Without thinking, I leaned forward and let my head thunk on the card table. Little exclamations of surprise came from Maven and Lex, but Molly just patted my back.
She does that, she explained.
I was in so much trouble. I mean, I hadn't felt great about the future when I was just a single 20-something who'd gotten knocked up by her dead lover, but now I was also carrying the frickin' savior of magic. Above me, Lex was asking Maven,
Is this why you brought me on? So you could keep an eye on Charlie through me?
Her tone was completely neutral.
You're a tremendous catch in your own right, Lex.
Maven answered, sounding a little amused.
But, I'll admit, I want to keep an eye on Charlie, too, to make sure she stays safe. When she grew older, I always planned to have a word with you about this.
Why? Molly asked, practically. I mean, no offense, ma'am, but do you even have a horse in this race?
Maven sounded just the slightest bit offended. Of course I do. We all do. Magic is dying, which could result in all of our species dying out. A witchling who grows up to have her own babies and boost the ley lines will help all of us.
My forehead was still plastered to the table. Great, now I felt like a broodmare. A broodmare who was supposed to be sterile, goddammit.
This can't be happening, I said into the tabletop.
Molly patted my back again. I sat up and looked at Maven. What do I do? I whispered. I'm not sure why I was asking her. I barely knew her, and I had no reason to think she cared about my best interests or the babies. But she had given me the information freely, without demanding a favor in return, and she seemed to actually care about the fate of the whole old world, not just herself or her little domain. Maven gave me a faint smile.
At the end of the day, a pregnant gnoll has mostly the same options as any other pregnant woman. You can keep the baby, or you can abort it.
Adoption? Molly asked. Maven pursed her lips.
That I would not advise. The witchling will be nearly impossible for anyone else to care for. Or protect.
I don't protect things, I squeaked. I mostly break them. Molly squeezed my hand. She looked at Maven. Are you going to tell anyone? She said in a low voice. Dashiell? Maven made a show of furrowing her brow.
Tell anyone what? I thought we were speaking hypothetically.
Molly grinned. I like the powerful vampire lady, she told me. Thank you, I managed to say to Maven. I owe you one. Maven shook her head.
No, you don't. If you were to get pregnant, someday, we would all benefit.
At that moment, the burner phone buzzed in my pocket, making me jump. I dug it out and looked at the screen, which displayed my own cell phone number, the one for the bat phone. At least Jesse was okay. I was about to ignore it, but it occurred to me that he wouldn't be calling from this number if it wasn't urgent. I answered the phone. Hey, this isn't a great time. Scarlet! Oh, thank God! It wasn't Jesse's voice. It was Kirsten, and she sounded panicked. I don't know where you are, but you need to get home right now. Fear churned the few contents of my stomach. What happened? Where's Jesse?
I had a witch problem, and Dashiell said Jesse was covering for you, she said in a rush. He wasn't answering the emergency line or his personal cell, and I got worried. So I had Abby track your phone, and then I saw the missed call.
Kirsten, slow down. Where's Jesse?
He's right here,
she said, her voice almost a sob.
But he's been attacked. I think he's dying.
Chapter 14. I stood up, ignoring the curious looks from Molly and Lex.
What do you mean he's dying?
I demanded, turning my back to the others.
What kind of attack?
Magical, Kirsten said. Someone hexed him and dumped him in the Biona Wetlands Reserve. Teddy and I found him.
Teddy was Theodore Hain, Kirsten's husband. But a magical attack would be her department.
Can't you undo it? I've been trying, she said, nearly wailing. I've never seen anything like this. It's like he's in a coma, but he's burning up. His temp is 108. If I had a couple of days, I could reverse engineer it, but he's losing fluids too quickly. Where are you?
108? I repeated.
I had turned around and twirled a finger at Molly, our signal that we needed to leave. She stood and started gathering our things.
Is that even possible?
Apparently it is. We took him back to your place. It was the closest. And the carpet around him is soaked with sweat. And I can't figure out why.
There were tears in her voice. The witch leader of L.A. was usually good in a crisis, but I'd seen her break down when people she cared about were in mortal danger. Jesse was her friend, too. And the fact that her magic couldn't fix him had to be terrifying. It was certainly terrifying me. I could hear Hane's low, soothing voice murmuring to her in the background. She took a deep breath.
I don't think I can solve this before he dies from it, Scarlet. He needs you to break the hex.
Shit, shit, shit! How long does he have? I demanded.
I'm not a doctor, Scarlet. Can't you just get here?
But I wouldn't be deterred.
Best guess?
She hesitated again.
Hours.
Two. Maybe three.
Jesus, no wonder she was panicking. I wanted to burst into tears, but I needed to focus. I couldn't help Jesse if I was falling apart.
Call Matthias. Get him there, I urged.
Matthias was the witch-born human doctor who helped us with medical stuff when we couldn't use the human healthcare system.
I'll pay his bill myself.
I already called. He's on his way,
she said more clearly.
When can you and Shadow get here?
Shadow?
I echoed. Jesse was taking care of Shadow. A pause, and then Kirsten said,
She's not here.
I swallowed hard. I needed to be there, but even if Molly drove like a bat out of hell, we'd never make it back in less than 8 hours.
Hang on.
I spun around and looked at Maven.
Do you have a plane?
I demanded. Dashiell had a plane. Maven blinked.
Excuse me?
Lex shot me a be careful look. My words had been too flippant for someone so powerful, but I didn't care.
A private aircraft. Do you have one? Or access to one?
One of my Denver vampires owns a Gulfstream,
Maven allowed.
Can I borrow it?
Unhurried, Maven leaned back in her chair and crossed her arms over her chest.
Why?
I forced myself to take a breath before saying, Someone under my protection has been hexed. He'll die if I don't get back in time to break this spell.
Please.
Maven just studied me. In that moment, I realized I would do anything to save Jesse.
I'll owe you a favor,
I said. She nodded.
All right.
Lifting the phone, I said to Kirsten, I'm on my way. Meanwhile, I hesitated, but made myself say the words.
Call Will and see if he'll come be on standby.
There was a pause, then Kirsten whispered,
Are you serious?
Yeah.
There was no guarantee that Jesse would actually change from a werewolf bite. As Maven had explained, magic was fading and the odds were against him, and being a werewolf was considered a last resort among last resorts. Maybe I was being selfish to even consider it, but I wouldn't let Jesse die if I could find any way around it.
Did you tell Dashiell?
I said to Kirsten.
No, he's my next call.
I wanted to ask her to keep it from Dashiell, but this was way too big. Jesse being hexed was a magical crisis on its own, but if Shadow was loose in the city...
Let me do it,
I said, my stomach turning into a rock.
Please. I'll call him in 10 minutes from the car.
Kirsten wasn't happy about it, but she agreed. I hung up the phone and turned to face the others. At some point, Quinn had come running into the room. He was still breathing hard. I gave him a blank look. Then got it. I'd extended my radius to the front of the building, alarming him.
Oops.
I looked at Maven in a daze. She was so powerful. Did I need her to dismiss me? Should I curtsy or something? To her credit, she waved us off.
No need.
I ran out of the coffee shop at a dead run, with Molly and Lex at my heels. There are serious advantages to knowing an ex-soldier with old-world connections. Before we even made it to the highway, Lex had made the necessary calls and arranged everything. She would drive us to the airport, introduce us to the pilot, and take care of Eleanor until we could send someone to drive the car back to Los Angeles. As soon as we had the plan in place, I called Dashiell and ran him through an abbreviated version of the last 24 hours. I was still sick, but I'd gone to Boulder to speak to Lex about an urgent personal matter. I'd left Jesse in charge of Shadow, and they'd been attacked. There was really no way to sugarcoat it, so I didn't bother trying. As I had expected, his response was so curt it was practically a snarl.
I will connect with Kirsten and do what I can for Mr. Cruz. You and I will discuss this the moment the crisis has passed. And he hung up.
I stared at the phone, half afraid it would bite me.
Was he pissed? Molly asked from the back seat.
You could say that, I said dully. Dashiell had sounded like he genuinely wanted to kill me, but at this point it was hard to care.
Jesse.
My knuckles ached, and when I looked down, I realized that my hands were clenched into fists. We arrived at the airport, but before I could even open the door, Molly said suddenly,
Wait!
Lex and I both turned to look in the back seat, but Molly's focus was on Lex.
Press me, she said hurriedly. Press me to forget she's pregnant.
Molls, no, I said. At the same time, Lex said,
It won't work.
Why not?
Molly asked her, ignoring me.
You've known about it for too long, Lex explained. It's too deep in your mind now. I can't take away the knowledge without taking away the last 2 days, and that's too much. Your brain would work too hard to fill in the gaps. Just like when vampires press humans, I said, understanding.
Then press me to think it was a false alarm, Molly insisted. We came here and got answers, but Scarlet got her period while we were here.
Lex looked at me, questioning. As soon as I started to shake my head, Molly said,
Scar, it'll protect us both. It'll buy you time to figure out what to tell Dashiell and the others.
I felt myself wavering. I don't like the idea of you rewiring your brain for me. She just gave me a look.
I do it to other people all the time. Consider it karma.
I chewed on my lip for a second. The pregnancy had seemed so terrifying and all-encompassing only an hour ago, but Kirsten's phone call had put things in perspective. I had months to figure out what to do about the baby. Jesse had hours.
Okay, I said.
I looked at Lex.
Do it. Please.
You'll have to get out of the car, she reminded me.
Oh, right.
Null.
Relieved and ashamed of it, I opened the car door and climbed out. Lex called after me, and I turned and looked through the door at her.
About Jesse, she said,
and for the first time I realized she was afraid for him too.
Duh, Scarlet. He and Lex were friends. Will you call me and let me know?
She hesitated for a second and added in a hard tone,
Either way.
She gave me a long, meaningful look, and I actually understood. If Jesse died before I could save him, Lex would help me get revenge.
I will.
Chapter 15. I've been in some horrible situations where lives were at risk, but I can honestly say those 2 hours of flight time were the longest in my life. Molly tried to talk to me a few times, I think, but I barely heard her, and probably only grunted in response.
Jesse.
This was all my fault. I had dragged Jesse into the old world to begin with, and I'd put him in personal danger any number of times. But usually I was at least with him, to level the playing field. He could handle danger as a human up against humans, and I'd taken for granted that he could handle my job for a couple of days, like he'd done before. I'd taken him for granted. And then I'd abandoned him, leaving him vulnerable to magical attack. Now someone had hexed him with some kind of lethal spell, and Shadow was...
I frowned. Wait, where was Shadow? When Kirsten first said the Barghest was missing, I'd assumed Shadow had gone for help. But maybe she was trying to track Jesse's attacker? Or maybe she was trying to find me? Shadow was as smart as some humans, but she wouldn't try to run to Colorado, would she? I had a sudden, terrible thought. Saying a prayer of thanks for the private plane, I pulled out my phone and called Kirsten. First, of course, I asked about Jesse.
We still can't get him to swallow water, and Matthias couldn't get an IV in, she reported. His veins just won't take it, like he's in stasis or something. But we've had another idea.
Which is?
Hayne and I filled your bathtub with ice, she said.
She had calmed down a lot now that there was a doctor on hand.
His fever is down to 104. He's still dying, but I think we can keep him alive until you get here. And Will is here, just in case.
Okay. Okay. Molly was looking at me inquisitively. I gave her a weak smile to show that things were looking better.
Scarlet,
Kirsten continued. What?
I want to prepare you, she said in a hushed voice. There could be brain damage from the fever.
Could be? I echoed. So, not for sure, right? Now I sounded hysterical, and Molly's eyes widened. I looked away from her, out the dark window.
It's a magic-induced fever, so we don't know if it'll have the same effects as if it was from an infection.
Brain damage? For a second I was too choked up to speak, but I forced myself to remember my reason for calling. I cleared my throat. Listen, when you got to my place, was the door unlocked?
A pause. Yes, it was standing open.
Okay, that worked with the theory that Shadow was pursuing the attackers, but I had to be sure. Look around, I said. Do you see a purple leather collar anywhere? A brief pause, then, hang on. I waited. Considering her size and how she looked, it was hard for Shadow to blend in. Having a girly purple collar helped, at least a little. Shadow didn't like wearing it, but she accepted that it was a necessary part of disguising her as an actual dog. Kirsten came back on the line.
I found it, she reported. It was outside on the driveway.
My stomach dropped. Is it damaged? Like she clawed it off?
No, it was just unbuckled. Why does this matter?
Molly was looking at me again. There used to be a tracking device in her collar, I explained. Shadow kept scratching at it and shorting it out, which was possibly accidental, but I wouldn't put it past the Barghest to decide she didn't feel like having an electronic tag. Her claws were as sharp as my throwing knives. Abby's been working on a new scratch-proof design, so the purple collar has no tracker. I just sliced off a tiny bit of it so I could get a witch to find it. As a supernatural creature, Shadow couldn't be found with a tracking spell. Magic usually couldn't work against itself, for some reason. But any decent witch could track a fragment from a larger piece, like the collar. But if someone took her,
they took the collar off. Kirsten finished for me, knowing you could get us to track it.
Is the house trashed? I asked, like there was a fight?
No.
Molly, who had heard most of the conversation, put in, couldn't Jesse have taken the collar off? Maybe, I admitted, but why would he have left it in the driveway? None of us had a good answer for that. If the collar had been some kind of message, I wasn't getting it. Meanwhile, we had to proceed as though whoever had attacked Jesse had also taken Shadow.
Just focus on getting here, Kirsten said finally.
So I did. He may have been mad at me, but Dashiell still sent a car to get us from the airport. As we pulled up to the house, I was already extending my radius as far as I could. I felt the bzzz sensation of a spell fizzing out. But this wasn't like the spells I was used to dealing with. It was powerful, for one thing, and there was almost a taste to it,
something thick and green and toxic. It made me want to shower and throw up at the same time. I pushed away the thought and hurried out of the car toward the cottage, Molly rushing along at my heels. I heard hushed voices as I walked in, but they went silent as Kirsten heard me coming.
"In here,"
she called from the bathroom. Our bathroom was small and not particularly clean, but Hane, Kirsten, and Matthias had all managed to cram inside. Hane leaned against the counter while Kirsten and Matthias crouched in front of the tub. They'd taken off the shower curtain, and I could see Jesse lying inside, covered in a mound of ice. He was facing away from the door, but as I squeezed into the room and rushed to his side, it struck me that he looked dead. His eyes were closed, and I couldn't tell if his chest was moving. Someone had stripped him down to his boxer shorts. I could see the red color glinting through the ice, and his sickly yellow bare skin only heightened the appearance of death.
"I felt the spell break," I blurted. "Is he..."
Matthias was feeling for a pulse at Jesse's neck. I held my breath.
"He's alive,"
Matthias announced after what felt like an eternity.
"Good, but he's not out of the woods yet."
"What do you need?"
I demanded. Matthias raised his eyebrows at me, but didn't comment on my sharp tone.
"A bed or cot. We need to set up a saline IV.
"When will he wake up?"
Matthias shook his head.
"That I don't know. I've never seen a fever induced by magic before. If it caused brain damage, he might not wake up at all. Or he may have lost any number of functions. Or," he shrugged, "he may be fine as soon as we get him rehydrated. But right now, the dehydration has its own threats. Let's move him."
I had 1,000 more questions. Would a werewolf bite fix brain damage? But I swallowed them and went to pull back the covers on my bed, grateful I'd changed the sheets a few days before. I laid down a clean towel and watched anxiously as Hane and Matthias hauled Jesse out of the tub and got him positioned on the right side of the bed. Hane then retreated to the living room to make more space, and Kirsten and Molly hovered in the hall. I couldn't take my eyes off of Jesse.
"Why is he shivering?"
I cried out.
"His lips are blue."
"It's the ice,"
Matthias explained, his eyes focusing on getting an IV needle into Jesse's arm. There was curiosity and a little interest in his voice.
"It shouldn't be affecting him so much. When a regular fever breaks, it goes down slowly."
When the IV was inserted and taped down, Matthias took an instrument out of his jacket pocket and sort of swiped it across Jesse's forehead, studying the results.
93 degrees, he announced. "Mild hypothermia already. Interesting."
I really don't know why it happened in that particular moment, but suddenly I burst into tears. Great hiccuping sobs erupted out of me while I stood there. Kirsten and Matthias stared at me in shock, and Matthias, who rarely had a hair out of place, sputtered,
"He's going to live, for Christ's sake. It's very mild."
But I just kept bawling, and as if that weren't enough, I suddenly realized that I was about to puke. I ran into the bathroom and started heaving, while in the other room I was dimly aware of Molly telling the others that I was still getting over the flu, that I'd had a really hard day with no sleep and not much food, or something like that. I wasn't really listening. Then Molly was there, in the bathroom, handing me toilet paper to wipe my face and help me get to the sink, where she gave me a bottle of Listerine. Somehow, even as I rinsed out my mouth, I was still crying.
"You okay?"
she asked quietly. I just shook my head. Molly gave me a sympathetic smile.
"Look on the bright side. At least you're not pregnant."
I let out another choked sob, which I think she took as a laugh.
"Come on,"
she said, putting an arm around my waist. I let her steer us back into my bedroom, which was now empty except for Jesse, who had an IV drip in his right arm. Matthias had even set up what looked like a little extendable IV tree on the side of the bed. Jesse's color was a little better, but his lips still had a bluish tint. I could hear low voices in the living room. Matthias said we just have to wait and see about the brain damage, Molly said softly. She pulled back the covers on the empty side of the bed. Get in, she ordered. I just looked at her, completely overwhelmed. I know you have to find Shadow and face the music with Dashiell, but you can't do any of that if you can't stand up, she said, not unreasonably. And you need to be with Jesse right now. It's only a little after midnight. You can sleep for a couple of hours before you go see Dashiell. I'll call him and buy you some time. She was right, but I still shifted my weight from side to side, looking at Jesse. I'm afraid, I whispered. Afraid of hurting him or afraid to touch him? Molly asked in an amused voice. I gave her a startled look, and she rolled her eyes at me. Just get in, Scarlet. God knows he needs the warmth. Guilt lanced through me again, and I crawled onto the bed next to Jesse. You wanna, you know, take off some of your clothes? She suggested, but I just shot her a glare. Molly gave me a little, have it your way, shrug, and departed, closing the door behind her. Despite all the insane things that were happening around me, I suddenly felt like an awkward teenager. Jesse and I had been friends for years. We had once gone out on a date and even kissed a couple of times, but we'd never shared a bed, especially when one of us was nearly naked. Cautiously, I put my hand on his arm. I was still flushed from all the crying and vomiting, and I was startled by how cool his skin felt. It was scary. Jesse? There was no response. I shook the arm gently and said a little louder, Jesse! Nothing. Oh, God. What if he didn't wake up? What if he really had suffered brain damage? I'd come so close to losing him, and I still could. Forgetting my awkwardness, I scooted closer to him. He was so cold. I moved his arm and nestled into his chest, pulling the blankets close around us. I tried to think warm thoughts. And then, despite the whirlwind of madness that still swirled around us, I drifted to sleep. Chapter 16. Jesse woke up slowly. He first became aware of a woman's body pressed against him in an unfamiliar dark room. The only light came from a crack in the doorway, creating a limited stripe of visibility that just showed him sheets and a cloud of long dark hair. It was disorienting. Had he had a one-night stand? He hadn't done anything like that in years. On the other hand, he did feel sort of hungover. Jesse caught the familiar smell of Scarlet shampoo and felt something sticking out of his right hand and... Wait, Scarlet was pressed against him? And was he naked? Jesse shifted a little. Okay, almost naked. Then it all began to come back to him. Shadow, the twisted slumber. He had seen her dead. Panic struck him for a second, but he carefully curled his hand to brush the dark hair away from her face. She was deeply asleep, one arm thrown across him, her slow, regular breathing warming the skin on his chest. For a long moment, Jesse just lay there, fighting the tears of relief that threatened to overwhelm him. She was alive. She was okay. And so was he. The twisted slumber had felt so real while he was in it, but now it had no more power than a bad nightmare. Trying not to move too much, he flexed his right hand and felt the sticky tape and the tube connected to it. An IV. That made sense if he'd been dehydrated. Low voices were coming from the hallway. Matthias checked on them a few minutes ago, said a familiar voice. Kirsten, the witch leader.
What did he say?
This was Molly.
Jesse's recovering well, much faster than he would from normal dehydration, which lends weight to the idea that the hex was boosting the condition, but they're both still out.
Her voice turned wry.
Matthias said he's half wondering if Scarlet should be getting saline fluids as well.
She'll be fine. She just needs rest.
Yes, well, Dashiell has called 3 times in the last hour. We'll have to wake her up soon.
I know. Molly sounded glum. 10 more minutes, okay?
Fine. There was a pause, and then Kirsten added, You should take a picture first. They're absolutely adorable in there.
Jesse smiled faintly as footsteps moved away down the hall. He gingerly reached over and turned on the bedside lamp, careful not to tangle the IV tubing. The flare of light hurt his eyes, but Scarlet didn't even stir. He looked down at her arm on his chest and saw that her fingers were curled into the sheet on the other side of him, like she had been afraid he would be taken away while she slept. Despite this, she looked so peaceful.
Scarlet,
he whispered. Her arm tightened around him, but she didn't stir. Jesse kissed her forehead. Her eyes fluttered open, her face only inches from his, and he felt her whole body tense. He'd sort of expected her to pull back, but for a long moment she just regarded him with her unnaturally green eyes. When she spoke, her voice was hoarse.
Are you brain damaged?
Jesse smiled. What a perfectly Scarlet question.
No more than usual.
He could feel her body slacken with relief.
Thank God.
Did you change my clothes while I was unconscious?
He asked, mock angry. A small smile lightened her face. Matthias did it, but I saw the whole show.
And?
She shifted so she could push the hair out of her face, but she still didn't move away.
Hey, man, you can read my Yelp review like everybody else.
Jesse grinned, but it faded quickly.
You're pregnant,
he said. She did pull away from him then, a series of complex expressions flickering across her face. Fear, guilt, shame, hope. But all she said was,
How did you know?
Shadow led me to the pregnancy test, in the garbage can.
Oh, that.
Where did you go?
Boulder, to ask Lex's boss about the baby. Jesse nodded. It made sense. She could have told him, but it really didn't matter anymore. Although he knew it wasn't his business, he couldn't stop himself from asking,
The father?
Jameson.
That explained a lot, actually. Another null.
She searched his face. Aren't you going to tell me how stupid and slutty I was? She challenged. That I was reckless? That I should have known better? His heart wrenched.
Scarlet. Do you really think I'm going to judge you for a romantic miscalculation?
He could tell she was fighting a smile at that, but she said, The old Jesse would have. He thought that over. He and Scarlet hadn't spoken for a long time after she'd gotten together with Eli for real. During their time apart, he'd had a brief, ill-advised marriage and a bout of self-loathing and depression.
Maybe you're right,
he admitted.
But I would have been wrong. Right now, more than anything else, I'm just relieved you're not going to run back to Las Vegas and be with someone.
He stopped himself before using the word else. He had no right. She turned onto her back so they were side by side, not looking at him. It doesn't matter anyway. I can't keep the baby. After we find Shadow, I need to make an appointment.
He didn't know what to say to that.
They lay there quietly for a few minutes, and then she glanced at him. Don't mention the pregnancy to anyone, okay? Even Molly. He wanted to ask about that, but Scarlet abruptly sat up, looking down at herself. Her jeans and t-shirt were wrinkled, and her hair was hanging in limp tangles. Her face was blotchy, and she looked thinner than ever. I'm a mess. I probably smell. She started to rake her fingers through her hair, avoiding his eyes.
Scarlet.
He reached out with his free hand and caught her hand, gently. She looked up at him then. I thought you were going to die, she said, her voice cracking. Because of me.
There was guilt on her face, and he knew she was thinking of Jameson, and probably her parents and her friend Caroline. All three had been killed by Scarlett's former mentor. Scarlett had come a long way, but he knew she still blamed herself some for that.
"I didn't die," Jesse contended. "And I'm not going to."
Her jaw clenched, and she gave him her stubborn glare. "You can't promise that."
"Watch me."
Her lower lip trembled, and for a second he was sure she was going to either cry or hit him, or both. Instead, she stood up, wobbled a little, and went over to open the bedroom door.
"He's awake,"
she called into the hallway.
It was a pretty effective way to shut down the conversation.
20 minutes later, Jesse was sitting at Scarlett's small kitchen table, dressed in the spare outfit from the trunk of his car, which was thankfully still parked at the cottage. The Lupari witches hadn't bothered to hide it, and since they'd taken his personal cell phone away from him, they hadn't bothered to search him for a second phone. Jesse didn't want to think about what would have happened if he hadn't pocketed the bat phone. He'd been lucky. Kane was sitting on Scarlett's counter, with Kirsten standing next to his dangling legs. Matthias had checked Jesse's blood pressure and temperature, given a brief lecture on hydration, and departed. Molly was uncharacteristically quiet, puttering around the kitchen making chicken noodle soup. Scarlett sat at the table, fidgeting with Shadow's purple leather collar. Jesse, who had been unconscious for nearly 24 hours, was too hungry to wait for the soup. He munched on handfuls of cereal while he told them all the story about Shadow and the Lupari witches.
"You're sure it's the Lupari?"
Kirsten asked him for the third time.
"Yeah, Killian and Sabine are their names. They didn't know I could speak some French."
"They used you against Shadow, didn't they?" Scarlett said. Jesse nodded.
"She allowed them to take her, to save my life." "Why not just kill you, once they had the Bargest?"
Hayne asked. Kirsten gave him a look, and he shrugged.
"No offense."
"None taken. I asked the same thing. I think they were hoping they could search my memory to find out where Scarlett had gone."
He told them about being put in the twisted slumber, about Sabine's taunts.
"I've got to call Will,"
Kirsten said softly. She pulled out her phone and stepped into the hall.
"Why did they come back?" Molly asked. "Just to take Shadow away?"
"Shit."
Haynes stood up and began dialing his phone.
"Shadow wasn't the only one they left behind."
He paced toward the back door, already speaking into the phone in a low, urgent voice.
"Who is he calling?"
Molly asked Scarlett and Jesse. Then Jesse got it. He closed his eyes, feeling like a fool. "He's calling the women's prison in Chino," Scarlett said. She'd put it together, too. "That's where they're holding the Lupari scout, Petra Corbett." Kane hung up the phone and turned back to them, looking grim.
"Not anymore,"
he said heavily.
"She broke out 3 hours ago."
Part 2. Chapter 17. A little over an hour after Jesse woke up, I sat watching as Dashiell stalked back and forth next to the enormous oval table in his atrium, his lips compressed with anger. I opened my mouth to say something, but Will gave me a quick little head shake, and I snapped it closed again. Earlier that evening, while I was still rushing home from the airport to break the hex on Jesse, Petra Corbett had walked out of the minimum security area at the California Institution for Women, despite the fact that she had been lodged in a higher security level. According to sources from both Jesse and Dashiell, the prison was currently scrambling to figure out how Petra Corbett had ended up on the completely wrong side of the prison. But it didn't really matter to us at this point. She was gone. Kane had been the one to call Dashiell, who had immediately summoned us to the mansion. Now Will, Beatrice, and Kirsten were all sitting at one end of the oval table, while Jesse and I had taken the first two seats on the long side. Dashiell was pacing on the opposite long side, and I, for one, was really glad for the minor safety of the table between us. I was expanding my radius just a bit to keep everyone human,
but I wasn't sure if that was helping or fueling Dashiell's rage. The cardinal vampire had been pacing for 10 minutes already, and it was nearly 5 in the morning, which meant we only had about an hour before sunrise. Every minute that went by without him speaking felt like a ratcheting up of tension. And yet, I felt strangely calm. Seeing Jesse almost die had snapped me out of my pregnancy news frenzy, forcing me to be present for the current crisis. Shadow, whom I loved, was missing, and we were facing an unspecified threat from some very bad people. I could put the whole abortion thing aside until we found Shadow and stopped the Luparii. Shut up, I could.
You left town without telling us,
Dashiell finally ground out, though he didn't bother to slow down or even look at me.
Yeah, I think we all knew who he was talking to. You invaded another cardinal vampire's territory. You left the Barghest with a human. The Luparii, who are back in my city, stole the Barghest back and broke Petra Corbett out of prison. And now they're all loose in my city.
He finally stopped, turning to glower at me, and spat out,
"You irresponsible child!"
Jesse sat up straighter, about to defend me. I reached for his hand under the table and squeezed it to stop him. "I made a mistake," I said to Dashiell. Despite the 2-hour nap with Jesse, I was more exhausted than ever. "I'm sorry."
"What was so important that you had to run to Colorado without telling anyone?"
Kirsten broke in. She seemed more surprised and curious than anything else.
"It's a personal matter," I said. They really didn't like that.
"Your personal matter or Allison Luther's?" Kirsten pushed.
I didn't answer that. Dashiell looked like he was ready to yell again, but Will, who had been fairly quiet thus far, stepped in.
"This is getting us nowhere,"
he said in his calm voice. Will looked like a lovable sitcom dad, and he was the most chill werewolf I'd ever met. But that only meant he was calm for a werewolf.
"I understand there should be consequences for Scarlet's actions, but I suggest we put a pin in that until Shadow and the Luparii can be found. Agreed?"
He gave Dashiell a pointed look, and the cardinal vampire probably realized the same thing I did. With the Luparii running around L.A., Will and his pack had the most to lose.
"Agreed,"
Kirsten said readily.
"Fine."
Dashiell didn't exactly sound gracious, but he'd managed to stay just shy of begrudging.
"Are we sure they're even still here?"
Kirsten asked. She looked like she couldn't decide whether or not to be hopeful.
"They've got Petra and Shadow. They put us in our place. Why not take their toys and go home?"
"Shadow is not a toy," I said through gritted teeth.
Now Jesse reached over to squeeze my hand.
"She's basically a person."
Dashiell let out a little disgusted snort, but didn't deign to respond to my outburst.
"That is possible,"
he said to Kirsten. His gaze moved to Jesse.
"Mr. Cruz, what was your impression?" "Well, they definitely wanted to kill Scarlet," he said, shooting me an apologetic look. "I got the sense that it was a priority." "But what about now?" Will asked. "Would they stick around just to kill her?"
His phrasing made me bizarrely indignant, but Jesse answered before I could.
"I can't really explain it right, but I got the sense that there was a bigger play happening. It's something that Sabine was looking forward to. It was like..."
He paused for a moment, searching for the words.
"Like they were looking through a list, and Scarlet needed to die before they could move on to the next item. Whatever their plan is, I don't think Scarlet's supposed to be around for it."
Everyone looked at me. Kirsten and Will, at least, seemed worried. But I was still enjoying my strange new sense of calm, so I just shrugged.
"Happy to disappoint."
"Even if that's true," Will said, "there's nothing to suggest the next part of their plan doesn't take place back in France. They could be cutting their losses. It
doesn't have to be France.
Dashiell's voice was uncharacteristically low, like he was thinking out loud. Since no one else was willing to question him, and I was already in trouble anyway, I said, "What do you mean? Isn't that where they live?"
"Some of them, yes."
He stood up, as if to pace again, but instead he wandered over to the patio door and stared at whatever was inside. Without turning to face us, he said,
"There's something you all should know. After the first time the Luparii came to my city, I thought it prudent to have my contacts in Europe gather more intelligence on them. As it turns out, our previous information had become outdated."
Jesse and I looked at each other. Somehow I didn't think Dashiell meant the Luparii had shriveled up and died in the last 3 years. "Are they still a big-ass family of werewolf hunters?" I asked, because sometimes my mouth just does things. Now Dashiell did turn and come back to the table, though he stood in front of his chair and leaned his fists on the edge.
"Yes and no," he answered. "The Gagnon descendants still run everything, and it sounds like this Sabine, at least, is one of them. But they have been accepting additional witches into their ranks, witches with different or no specialties. The Luparii name has come to encompass the entire organization."
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Kirsten nodding. "My aunt has heard similar rumors," she reported. "They are very secretive, though, and Scandinavia isn't considered part of the Luparii territory."
"Not yet,"
Dashiell muttered. Ignoring Kirsten's startled look, he finally sat down in his chair.
"The Luparii have been growing in size over..."